This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good morning, this is the Talking Devils podcast. I'm joined by Dave and Paul. We've already started leading to me before, and they've only been in the stream a minute, but they've already started bullying me before we've even kicked off. But it's all right, I love it, Monday morning. We need to talk about Luton 1, Manchester United 2, another mighty win for Erik ten Hag's Reds. Paul, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you very much, Wayne. Yeah,
Dave.
I watched a game of football, and it was a little bit more refreshing than it has been.
Yeah, no, it was entertaining, Dave. You've obviously had a very eventful weekend, but cut off with the head wins, always nice.
Yeah, I had an eventful weekend. My daughter's 24, so many other things going on, and had my daughter home from Germany as well, and yeah, and finish it off with a United win. Great weekend.
Yep. Right, so let's talk about it. Luton 1, Manchester United 2. Two Højlund goals in the first 10 minutes. Højlund, it's the only eighth time in Premier League history, because we all know that football began in 1992. I'm an historian, right? Well, describe myself as one. I looked up the records while the game was going, because I wanted to sort of tweet. I wanted to make sure I got the facts right. So it's the eighth time Manchester United have scored in the first minute in Premier League history. There's no way that I was going to spend my Sunday afternoon researching the entire 100 years before that. Wasn't going to happen. Even I'm not going to put myself through that. So in Premier League history, it's the eighth time it's happened. It's the sixth player to do it, because Rooney did it three times. And United, about 5 or 6 minutes later, scored a second. Højlund, time going in off his chest. Actually, really good finish with his chest. It might be the best chested finish I've ever seen. It was very good. There might be some more. I remember Brian Robson scoring with his todger in the 1994 semi-final. Yeah, I remember it, Paul. It was his last goal for United. You don't forget a thing like that. And that was a great performance as well. One of the guys from that team, which you were part of, you should remember that. Anyway, I'm digressing. Let's go back to them. They pulled a goal back and they really sort of went for it. And nearly, you know, there's an argument so they could have got a 2-2 draw. An argument that United should have got a 5-1 win. The number of times they went through one on one, it was a little bit Sunday league, you know, like going around the goalkeeper and making all those, like, it's always just a little bit too wide, or it's a little bit angsty and all that. And it was a really good performance from Luton that they kept on going. And that's the thing that we've seen with them. They've never really been embarrassed in the league. And thankfully, United came away with the kind of result that Arsenal and City have got there, that they were on the right side talking with a win this morning. There are obviously, as always with Manchester United, some elements of concern, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I mean, first of all, a very good game, and to win it in the fashion that we did, I mean, it was entertaining, and Højlund to get both of the goals is really the kind of thing that should at least make us feel all right on a Monday morning.
Paul? Sorry, here's at the...
Yeah, it's
Paul, okay. Yes, There is. I mean, there was definitely over the, I'd say the last few games, there was more positives there. Of course, there's still negatives, but I just looked at it and you can look at it and say there's more to take from it than what has been in other wins. And just by the fact of, I mean, you look at the early goal and you see how he done that, Hoyland, the confidence he had to go on and do that. Could that have happened a few weeks ago? There's a good chance he would have been a bit edgy because he was being like destroyed a bit because of the fact that he wasn't scoring goals, and he's gone and took that on. And you look at the second goal, you know, great improvisation, and he knew what he was doing. It was as simple as that. You know, the way he adapted to go and do that, I think if that happened 9 times out of 10 to many other players, they would have just taken the whack, taken the thump of it, and that would have been it. But he knew what he was doing. It was so controlled. So again, he's had a very, very good first half. The only disappointing thing at the moment is that we don't see enough of him in the second half. Yeah. It seems like there's a bit too much joy in the first half, and all of a sudden, everyone seems to forget what got him in that position in the first place. And everyone tries to do their own individual little bits again. You know, that's the disappointing thing for me, Wayne. And I think it's becoming blatantly obvious now when you look at it that everyone seems to want to take on too much and looking to ground themselves in glory as well.
Yeah. No, it's fair. I mean, Dave, I mean, that was the thing really that seemed to... United's wins against, let's say, for want of a more friendly phrase, against the so-called Leicester lights, that's really letting United down. Like, is that this greed that we are seeing, or this idea that maybe like some of the players, and I'm not naming names, but like people will name their own, but it seems like there's this element where you get a couple of goals ahead and United start thinking they're better than what they are. And they can't really, especially when they lose one or two players to injury, they can't afford to take a liberty, like thinking they're better than what they are. And maybe we saw it again yesterday, but I still think like maybe just a bit of misfortune with the or lack of composure going around the goalkeeper at the end. By the way, the goalkeeper did really well, considering that he had that amount of one-on-ones to face. So his positioning for two of them, at least, in the second half was brilliant. The Garnacho one, and I think there was a Hoyland one as well. He was really good in his positioning to be able to sort of stop those going in. But nonetheless, they should have still gone in. United should be here a lot more comfortably. In this position when we're talking about it on a Monday morning. Dave, that's, I think maybe, apart from the injuries, that is the thing, isn't it? It's something that you wonder, can it be coached out of this side? Can it be something that the players grow out of? But the players who, they seem too old to be growing out of it. It just seems an element of like greed takes over and they all think that they're all going to get the names on the goal scoring sheet instead of helping United to a bigger win. Entertaining nonetheless, what did you make of yesterday's game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone can argue the fact that we should have won that game by 4 or 5 goals. And the goalkeeper was immense. He really was. On another day, you know, we're going around and we're scoring 2 or 3 more goals. Fernandez was very unlucky. Defender pulled off like an absolutely fantastic block. But when I was watching the game yesterday, and we went 2-0 up, I kind of feared, because I think we're the worst team to be 2-0 up in the league ever. You know, most teams 2-0 up, they start breezing. But I think there's an element of truth to it when we get 2-0 up that everyone wants a piece of the pie then, you know. We do get some players that are pretty greedy at times. You know, Marcus Rashford has definitely improved since we start scoring. He's definitely starting to fit into this new front line in regard to, maybe it was pressure on him in regard to him thinking that he has to always score. Now that we have Hoyland banging them in, we have Garnacho chipping in, maybe that's the reason why Rashford has kind of got into that winger role now, rather than every time he got the ball, he would just run directly into a defender. It was very, very frustrating, or that last minute decision not to pass was, you know, chance gone. It's something that Garnaccio needs to learn about as well. But I think he's improving a lot since he's been out on the right. To go back to Paul's comment about Hoyland, about him, like in the second half, it is very noticeable after 60, 70 minutes, he kind of just fades. And I think a lot of that's down to the fact that for 60, 70 minutes, he never stops running. So maybe it's a coaching thing, it's a manager thing to tell him that, you know, you can't run flat out for 60, 70 minutes and expect to, you know, finish the game on 90 minutes, because he's always, you know, especially lately, he always seems to be one of the first players to be taken off. And he looks absolutely knackered when he comes off. He looks beat. He looks dead. I think it's because he doesn't conserve a lot of his energy. But just, you know, nail on the head again with that, you know, from Poland, those goals. A couple of weeks ago, he's not scoring them. He really isn't. And that chested goal, I mean, come on. If that was any other player on any other team, it'd be on repeat on Sky. That was a phenomenal. I'll be honest, when I seen it first, I just thought it was a deflection. I thought it just whacked off and went into the net. But when you see him in slow motion, he meant every bit of that. He chested the ball into the net after, you know, was hitting about, I don't know, 50 miles an hour. Absolutely phenomenal goal. Ronaldo scores that, Messi scores that. We're never going to hear the end of it. But that was an absolutely phenomenal goal. And he's not trying that a few weeks ago. He's ducking. He's letting it hit him in the chest and trying to let it drop and turn on it. But I was very impressed with United yesterday. I think there was more good than bad that came out of that game. The only bad thing that really came out is like Luke Shaw. He's been phenomenal since he came back for us. I'm just hoping it's not a bad injury. I mean, I got to believe that Maguire got hit because he was, you know, walking a tightrope like Casemiro. Because Maguire has improved a hell of a lot, but Johnny Evans came on and did an absolutely phenomenal job. We are seeing the best of Varane at the moment, but I always have my doubts about him. When Manchester United are doing well, we see the best of Varane. When Manchester United hit a blip, we see the injured Varane. I'm not sure whether it's psychological or whatever, but I'm just not sure he's a fighter. But when we're playing well, he's one of our best players. I'll be honest, he really is. But it's always disheartening to see that when our form dips, he just seems to disappear. But not to take away from the fact that I think we should absolutely come away from that game 4, 5, 6 goals clear. It was a tricky place to go to. I'm delighted with the away win, especially at Luton, because like we said last week, that would have been the first fixture they looked for when they got promoted. I can only imagine the atmosphere was electric there yesterday. It felt like that. It felt like a real old, you know, mid-90s. I won't say old because Paul was playing dead. It felt like a mid-90s game. with the atmosphere and just the game itself, it really did. The pitch wasn't the best. And then after the game, we had the comments by the manager complaining about the 4 minutes. I'm loving hearing all this from the managers complaining because, you know, with the moves Manchester United are making there with Sir Jim Ratcliffe coming in, there seems to be a bit of concern out there that Manchester United could be able to get it back together and over the next 2 or 3 years, get back to the top. So I was delighted to hear him complain about the 4 minutes and not just complain about the 4 minutes, but basically hint at it because it was Manchester United and they were winning 2-1. There was only 4 minutes at it. You know, a silly comment, but it tells you that people are starting to get concerned and that makes me happy.
Yeah, it's interesting, the Hoyland thing, and I agree with what you're both saying about confidence and the difference that you can see. Even though I've been quite consistent throughout the season when saying that I've never had any concerns about him because he's still scoring in the Champions League and there were good goals as well. But I do find it funny because the goal that he scored, the second goal, like you said, there's an element, you would say, fortune about it. Not necessarily finish, because the finish is executed great, but fortune in the way that you don't see a striker score like that. And I do wonder, it makes me think of Ole, it makes me think of Chicharito and those players who, they weren't really affected by form. Maybe they did have periods where they were out of form. You didn't look at them as form players. You looked at them as lucky players. They were kind of lucky omens that they'd score. Remember Hernandez's first goal being, he went off his chest onto his face in the Community Shield, Charity Shield in old language. I'm not ready for Community Shield. Like, I'm still calling it the Coca-Cola Cup as well. But yeah, like Ollie would score goals like that as well. And you want Højlund to be that kind of player, really. But you want him to be more than that, because he's leading the line for United. And a part of why he looks knackered is probably because of the fact that he's the only one asked to be leading the line, and it's a lot of work for him to be doing, especially considering that Garnacho and Rashford aren't renowned pressers. You know, it's a lot to ask, but he's coming up with the goods at the moment, and as long as he's doing it in the first half, then at least we can sort of relax it in the second. Got a question here. We've got some comments coming in, so I'll come to them quickly. Jock Zacharyson says, what do you think in the dynamics of the team that's causing this selfish streak? The team looks to put in a shift, but is there like a team spirit? It's an interesting conversation point. I guess we should touch on it quickly. Like, so we've all mentioned it. We could all give our opinions on it. In my opinion, I would say that United, over the last 7 years, have been in a position where the better players inside have been rewarded with fat contracts and been elevated to an ego status where you might look at that player and say they probably wouldn't be in a great all-time United team, but they're earning more money than any Manchester United player in that position ever has. They are elevated into this worldwide profile in a way that a lot of players haven't been, because United's status and the Premier League status elevates them into that area. So they've got the ego of being someone who's won a Premier League by 6 or 7 times. And when you have that in a team that's growing and developing in this way, I guess you're going to find that you're going to have a contrast of players who are keen to learn and eager. And then the ego will take over when United are coasting or look like they're going to be coasting in games. And I guess it that kind of thing. It's difficult because it's a modern problem. I'd love to have seen how Fergie dealt with it. It is very much a modern problem, but how Ten Hag approaches that, because it's a difficult thing to coach out of, not a player, a human being in their mid-20s when they reach a certain level of maturity or immaturity. It's difficult to sort of drum that ego out of them. Ego, which can be a good and bad thing as well. Paul, do you agree with that? Do you agree with the fact that it feels like it's a modern problem? Do you think that there's a lack of team spirit in there? What would you put the selfishness down to in, well, we see in second half of games, or when United are like a Newport, when United were a couple of goals up, suddenly what looks like it could be a 7 or 8 goal win turns into a scrambly win because they don't play as a team for that period of time. What would you put that down to?
I think when you talk about it, it does come from the fact of playing well, achieving. That's when people start coming together more. That's the obvious way of doing it. But you're seeing teams who are struggling, but yet they show more appetite than what Manchester United do at this given moment. There's something in them, and it doesn't matter. You can run someone every single day, every minute of the day, and you'll say how fit they are. But fitness comes from the head telling the body that it wants to do it, and then the body will keep going and going. And the team does lack that, and the only way to get that back in this given time, or we should say for maybe end of season, when it comes to end of season, is a change in personnel. Change in personnel, or players, I should say, because the right players will drive the other players on, because they'll be telling them. There's nothing worse than hearing the word cheat from a teammate. Mm. You just don't want to hear that, because there's no comeback from that. You've got to then go out and prove yourself. And you go and prove yourself, but then the question will be answered again to say that you've been letting your teammates down first, but more important, you've been letting yourself down, because you just haven't given enough. You haven't given everything that's there. So, and I think the team is that way. You can see it. You see it in the second half. I saw sometimes Højlund, and he suddenly saw that the balls were going into his feet infrequently, though, and he was holding people off, holding, waiting for people, someone to give it to. And there was nothing around him. But you watch the best teams, you watch the good Manchester United teams and the great Manchester United teams, when that ball went into a front man, the team moved like that in chunks, all moved together close to where the action was, not big distances like that. People sometimes, oh, it's great counter-attacking play. No, it's laziness to push it on there. And I think that's what's happening. And it happened so many times yesterday. Everyone just sat deep. They wasn't squeezing up on Luton at all. So in theory, Manchester United allowed Luton to play football around them. They played better football with the ball, Luton, than Manchester United yesterday. That's the worst bit of it, Wayne, really, to be perfectly honest. When they had the ball, they was definitely more productive, only because they had so many orange shirts to hit all the time. And because then United dropped back deeper, so there was a big gap in between the midfield and the defence. And then when the ball did go into Højlund, he had nothing around him. His runners, the two wide lads were so wide, they don't come into defence. And then you look in the midfield, and in the second half, Scott McTominay, I don't know where Scott McTominay was in the second half, to be perfectly honest. He wasn't in the game. It was just incredible. It was like a fable. But it is fitness of mind. That's the most important thing. You've got to want to work hard to work hard. By saying, oh, he works hard in training, he don't, you know, in other words, when they do a 5-mile run, he runs the 5 miles, great. But did he just do the run, or did he try and put anything into the run? And trust me, you're talking to someone who hated running long distances, sometimes didn't really push himself to the limit, was happy just to get through and do enough to be seen that I've done it. So I can understand both sides of the coin, because a few times you do feel embarrassed when teammates maybe say something to you or someone goes past you and it hurts. I wonder how much it hurts these players in that team that someone is doing that little bit more than them, Wayne.
Do you think, Dave? I mean, it does feel like, I mean, Dave, you can't really argue, but like, especially for someone just being as honest as that. It's an interesting thing. You can see it, though. It's one of those things, like, you know, like, it's obviously a mental thing. And like I said, I think it's a modern issue with the players, maybe, you know, like, and maybe it just come down to like things like money and drive, you know, all those kind of things. But normally those kind of things you can't see. They're not tangible. But you can see this issue. It's an issue that's there. Everything is causing it.
Yeah, I mean, we got to be clear. This is not a Manchester United problem. This is a modern game problem. When you give, I know you summed it up perfectly at home when you said, when you give human beings, not players, just actual human beings, that amount of money in such a short period of time, where's the motivation? You know, where does it come from then? You know, football has changed so much in the past 2 decades, even from, you know, from young kids, from the moment they start playing football, all the way through to the successful ones that make it. It's completely different. You know, there's no more street football. There's no more park football. Every kid that's being, you know, coached, is being coached by people that have to qualify and have badges. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but what it's done is it's created a problem further on down the line, because they're like robots at this moment in time. I only really thought about it when Paul said it there, when he was talking about this, you know, there's no real team spirit, there's no real togetherness. And I started thinking to myself, well, it's rare nowadays that you have teams that have all that togetherness right across the squad, because I think they all are individuals. You know, you'll get a couple of players that strike up a friendship, like York and Cole did, like Giggs and Incy, people like that. But you don't get it as a team anymore, because I think these guys are so in a bubble in themselves that, you know, other than PR stunts at Christmas to show a team out in fancy dress at a pub that's all orchestrated, you don't see that anymore with clubs. Teams are just not together the way they were 20 years ago. But, you know, it's modern football has created that, I'm afraid. And then you can't just flip a switch and change that as soon as they cross that white line to be a togetherness there. There's just not. There really isn't. And it's down to the fact that there is no incentive there. Average players are making, you know, they're making tens of millions a year, through their salaries, their sponsorships, their image rights. They're just making so much money. Where's the incentive? There's none. There really isn't an incentive. Really none. Oh. And unfortunately, that's what we've created in the modern game because, and I always say this, we go back to the, you know, early 90s when we wanted more football. We wanted something like Sky to come in. This is the juggernaut that it created. And here we are, in, you know, 2024, asking ourselves, did we do the right thing? Because it's definitely not the game that even was even 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. You know, there's just there's not enough players around nowadays that really want it, you know, because they're earning so much money. I mean, I would even imagine, you know, the players are looting, they're on, you know, a very tidy package after coming up to a win bonuses and a promotion bonuses and all. There's just no incentive there to do well. And it shows on the pitch. And like I said, it's not a Manchester United problem. It's a problem across the board. I mean, when you think back to Arsenal last year in January, they were going around as if they'd won the league already. You know, it was absolutely ridiculous in January. And it's just no, and the manager allowed them to do that. You know, I watched obviously that Arsenal documentary when it was on I think it was Amazon or whatever. And it just lacked any personality. It was like ridiculous. It really was. It was silly to see inside that dressing room about how modern managers and modern players behave these days. It's absolutely ludicrous. There's a falseness about it. But yeah, it's not a Manchester United problem. It's a football problem, I think. So.
Yeah, well, no, it is a Manchester United problem if they want to solve it and move forward. Because, I mean, if it smells like team spirit, as Nirvana once told us, then you've got a greater chance of reaching that Nirvana. I say this as a non-Nirvana. I'm not anti-Nirvana. Everyone wants to reach the Nirvana. Why am I saying this so often? It's just shut up and keep moving on to the next part. Talk about money and loyalty. By the way, good evening, Tony, from Australia. Looking forward to catching up with you when you're home. Tony Park there, Manchester United historian, youth historian. The gentleman who uncovered the facts of, you know, United's run of having... a youth team player in every team squad since dinosaurs were roaming the earth. Not that Tony was there, most certainly not. Let's talk about loyalty and money in football. Dan Ashworth, as John says in his comments, what does Paul think about the Dan Ashworth news and his potential incoming? Well, let's talk about this. This morning, they're talking about fees. Fees for Dan Ashworth to come to Old Trafford of between 10 and 20 million pounds. Now, if we're going to do this, like, I'm loyal to Manchester United. I love the club, right? I consider myself a writer, amateur historian. But if another club wants to transfer me for a couple of years to be their historian, they can offer me 2 million pounds and I'll quite happily spend years being an historian at another club. Dave, I'll come to you first on this one. Obviously, Dan Ashworth is the name that everyone's talked about because of his great work at Brighton, and I guess he's done some good things at Newcastle. It's difficult to know because of their progress is so strange, really, considering the money that they've got and the FFP regulations and everything like that. It's difficult to really determine how good a job he's done up there. You would say some of the recruitment has been smart, but the real success story is what he did at Brighton. So he seems like he's the obvious coming for the role that he's coming in for. The appointment itself is, I mean, I'm going to presume you would agree, a very smart move, but the secondary conversation about the fee for it is just ridiculous. And Newcastle of all clubs to be doing that, considering the way that they got him, it seems a bit of a nonsense. What do you make of the appointment, the proposed appointment?
I mean, yeah, it's listen, we all know that the football inside of Manchester United has been just left to die for the past 10 years since, you know, since Sir Alex well, 11 years now since Sir Alex moved on. The business side is where the Glazers concentrated everything in, and I know we have harsh words to say about a lot of the guys on that side, but they were top of their class for what they were brought in for. They really were. We can't argue with that. Year on year, revenue was up, record revenues. And that's not me patting the Glazers on the back. I'm just pointing out a fact that that's the side of the business they concentrated on, and they let the other thing just die. It's a, you know, so Jim Ratcliffe has come in. Part of his, as we all know, part of his part of the agreement was that he would take control of the football side, and he's made, you know, a couple of very, very smart moves right out of the gate. He's building a team like it was built on the business side, and this is really, really exciting stuff. You know, yeah, you are right. Answorth, you know, his Brighton days, you know, they're still seeing they're still seeing the rewards for that today. He hasn't been at Newcastle that long to start, you know, putting a stamp on it. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just gamesmanship by Newcastle, really, isn't it? Newcastle, you know, since they got bought out by Estate, they've had this fixation with Manchester United that they're rivals, and they're trying to do everything they possibly can. I think in the dark corridors of St. James's Park, they may even see this as a way to again try and prove that they are up there with Manchester United, you know, by making a demand for one of their key people that's that basically works in the background. It's gamesmanship. It's no surprise, but I'll guarantee you that's the silver lining that they see in this, is that, oh, let's ask for a fee from, you know, we're Newcastle United, we can ask for a fee. It's ludicrous, it's stupid. Where does it end? You know, we always say that. We bring this up every now and then on the pod, that we really shouldn't know referees' names. We definitely shouldn't know people from VAR, and we shouldn't really be knowing people that are on the board. I mean, you go back 20 odd years ago, you know, you knew the chairman and that was it. You know, maybe, you know, Morissette, what was that guy's name? Morris Watkins. Yeah. You knew about him because of his dealings with Manchester United and Cantona. So that was it. Everyone else, never heard of. Now they're asking for fees for people like Dan Answorth. It's definitely a silver lining for Newcastle, for Manchester United to be coming in. That's their silver lining. In my opinion, is that now they can, you know, stamp their foot down and go, hey, if you don't want them on gardening leave or whatever length this contract is, you got to pay for them. But 10 to 20 million? Yeah. I mean, if I'm being positive about it, just pay it. You know, be Manchester United. Just pay it and say 20 million, nothing to us, and then just move on. Because, you know, 20 million with what he did at Brighton, what he's potentially doing at Newcastle, 20 million will be nothing in 4 or 5 years' time. And at the end of the day, we're Manchester United. If we want to get back at the main table of titles, this is what we got to do. I just hope that we don't do, and I don't believe we will, don't turn this into a transfer saga like we normally do and drag it out and make a complete farce of it. And then you've got a guy that's probably going to come in with a bit of a chip on his shoulder and thinking, why don't you just pay it? You know, what did it bring me in? I'm all for just paying it. Just pay it, get it done, move on. It'll be a finger in the eye for Newcastle if Manchester United just go ahead and pay it. It is ridiculous. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not. It's silly. But just for me, it's an area that we clearly so lack in. We really do. Ten Hag seems to be behind it. He seems to be confident of it. But I would just pay it and move on. It is dumb, but pay it and move on.
I'd be interested to see. I'm just going to come to a couple of comments from Tony. But Danny says that fee is ridiculous and classic United tax. Tony, he's talking about Newcastle. They haven't won a trophy since 69, that's 5 years. The crowds down the years have been terrible. Another media spin, nothing more. Yeah, they've definitely invented their rivalry with United, but on the back of 95-96 season. And on Twitter, Tony did make a good comment about the earlier point with the relationship and the, you know, the egos and everything that we were talking about. He said different players seem to be developing, integrating and building consistency at different speeds takes time. This defensive injury levels don't help that. Something we'll talk about previewing the Fulham game. But I don't know, Dave. I like the two ways. First of all, I'm a little bit ignorant on this, like where the Ashworth appointment falls, because obviously United have got a...
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The budget for transfers, and that's governed somewhat by FFP regulations, wouldn't Ashworth be covered under employment law rather than sporting contracts in the same way that, you know, it's an interesting question, right? Because if he resigns from his job and then takes up a job at United, yes, all right, there'd be an element of compensation. I get that because there's a sporting element to it. But for to be asking for £20 million, it seems outrageous. And I look at the numbers, and if United are in that position, like I said, it's nothing to United. But it kind of is, because we're talking about a club who still governed by FFP was struggling to get Amrabat over the line in August because of the fee that they would take for that. They didn't get anyone in January because there's no cash. There was no cash. They couldn't do that until it was ratified. So, like, we obviously there's going to be different permutations with the amount of investment that's coming in, and what, with that covering the transfer element, you know, how much of the money's been pumped in, how much of that is for the budget of the transfers and the playing squad, how much of it is for redevelopment and all that stuff. All those questions are still to be asked, but United aren't in a position where they can just offer £20 million just to get it done. I don't think they, because I don't understand how that element of it works. With, but well, it is an interesting...
Just very briefly, Wayne, we're not privy to his contract at Newcastle, but I can almost guarantee you that there's a paragraph written in there saying that he has to give 12 months notice to go to any, you know, any competitive company or business or whatever, club, let's put it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the big sticking block here, is that Newcastle are saying, listen, you pay the fee, or yes, he is an employee, and he can resign, but he can't work in this industry for the next 12 months. It's a very common standard thing that's written into, as Tony said, the corporate world lasts about 3 months for salespeople, six as well. Exactly. You see, so there could be a 12-month thing in there where Newcastle are saying, hey, if he wants to leave, he leaves, but you're not going to get him until next year unless you pay X amount. And that's the reason why it's there. It's to stop this from happening. Very different to a player, because a player has freedom of movement. You know, there's a lot of different rules around that. But people at his level in the corporate world, they would sign that contract when he came from Brighton, because Newcastle, obviously, how they got him from Brighton was a little bit meh. So they obviously have written that in there, and that's the sticking block here. And the only people that can actually tear that up are Newcastle United. So that's the reason why there's a fee. And Newcastle know that they have United over a barrel. Will they pay 20 million? I'm not so sure. But I would just pay, if we want to be serious again about this, we just, you know, as someone said earlier, Manchester United comes with a tax, unfortunately. Just pay it and get it done. If not, Newcastle have resigned themselves to the fact that he's leaving. So they know that, you know, from the moment he started talking about this, he's being shut off, you know. So they've already, more than likely, in their head, moved on. He's going to leave. They're not going to convince him to stay. So in their head, it's like, well, you either give us 10 million I sit it out for 12 months. Either way, we're getting something out of this. So that's the reason why there's a fee, unfortunately.
Yeah. Tony says, in the corporate world, garden leaves lasts about 3 months for salespeople, 6 to 12 months max for senior leadership. I've never heard of this before. Tony's in corporate that world as well as I know you are, Dave. It says, if you stop working, then you're impacting a career. Stop someone working, you're impacting a career. Any longer wouldn't stand up in court. Paul, beyond all that sort of stuff, talking from a sporting aspect, the other side is, of course, that this is a quick appointment from the Ratcliffe side of it. You know, they've come in, they're making all these appointments. This is another one that they're making that's quite, hopefully, swift off the bat. But another one of those that really, to reap the rewards, like I said, not really seen him at Newcastle yet. He's riding on the brand reputation. So you're looking at 2 years, at least, until you see the rewards and the fruits of the labour. And it's a funny thing, isn't it, football? It's not that patient. Nobody's been that patient with Ten Hag yet. So the impatience that they'll show for Ashworth if United aren't instantly winning trophies or showing signs of like very smart transfer business. It's an interesting appointment. What do you make of it? Do you have an opinion on it, really, or are you just waiting for it to be done?
Well, I'm just surprised how it's got out there, because at the weekend, or prior to the weekend, Eddie Howe was saying that there's been no approach to Newcastle. So where's all this gossip come from, first of all? Who is letting the cat out of the bag? Yes, he done well at Brighton. We have to remember, Brighton have got a completely different way of working to any other club, maybe except Brentford. So what he'd done there was always going to be something, because those players were coming, they were coming from rainforests, weren't they, to be perfectly honest. Ecuador, there were, it's five of them everywhere. You can talk about the ones they put him in Newcastle, but I don't know, there's been a lot of people who have done things like that. So it seems excessive. And how long do these people keep going for? Where I don't really understand it, why they're going so far. They've got this person from Man City. He hasn't been talked about for quite a few weeks now. Now you're adding, you intending to add this, and it's Mr. Ashworth. I just think it's too much, too many stories still coming out. It just needs things, just to let things happen rather than seeing the faucet happen, because it is being pushed out there, totally pushed out there. It's Manchester United headlines again. 1 minute it's the ground, now it's this. What's going to follow? Because this will go quiet for a while. What's going to happen next? It's just one drama after the other. And the most important thing really should be that United have won 5 games on the bounce, including an FA Cup game. That's the bit, it's the football element that should be talked about more, because that's the most important bit. You know, what's going to happen now? This Ashworth fella, what's he going to do? If he does come to Manchester United, is he going to be signing autographs? He's going to have hats with his name on it and scarves? You know, things like that. I mean, it's just getting embarrassing now, you know, really, what's going on with the club. So for me, you know, Ten Hag is always going to be nodding and agreeing with things, because he mostly loves his job. He wants the best part. He wants all the best tools possible to do a great job, because he knows if he does a great job at United, it cuts above everyone else, without a shadow of a doubt. So he's going to nod his head to everything or say no when he should be saying no. So they can write about that one as much as they like, because we all know how that works. So I don't know how he worked at Ajax. He would have had something similar, but not the drama. Now, you know, they must be signing up, because all these clubs mention these people, wouldn't they, these great jobs they do. You don't know them, but all of a sudden they want to put them out there and make them big names. You know, it's just, I just think it's farcical now with the way what football's becoming now. It's become something so easy, which was a working class game played and watched by working class people. So now it seems to be dragged away from them. Now they want to pull it to middle class and the snob class, try and make it as complicated as possible and take it away from where it's come from before. With all these other people coming in wearing collars and tie and think that's going to make a difference in the game of football. It's shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, well, There you go. Paul has said his piece, and I tend to agree. You know, there's the tend to agree with the overcomplication of it, but you know, Ashworth in terms of his work on the recruitment side, I did say, like, you know, I'm talking about 2 years. Tony says that they all work for IFAB. I said two years, but I mean, Ashworth was in post from, it was like 2019 to 2022 at Brighton, so you did see the impact pretty quickly. Do you know what I mean? And nobody can deny that he had an impact there. But Brighton, like you said, are a well-run club like Brentford, and you see the impact of the work of all of those people. So it's not just down to one individual. There's Ashworth, probably himself. There's another player that we'll talk about another time, someone who did play the game, who Paul would have been very familiar with playing against him, Jason Wilcox from Southampton, who was an old Blackburn winger in the title. He won the title with Blackburn, didn't he? He was there. Yeah. Would have played as Paul many times. But we'll talk about him in the future, if and when that appointment happens. Interesting to talk about the Ashworth thing nonetheless, because it has been big news of the last week. And like you said, the other thing, Paul, like you said, like the other appointments, like the City guy, everything was kind of like done. It was done, like wasn't leaked. And I think some people, understanding that it's big news, have sort of tried to get their noses in the trough, like Romano, sort of, like, tell me when there's going to be different appointments and such, because it's all about getting retweets. You got to get them retweets and clicks. You should say that we're in the business of doing that on this podcast, technically, but we're not sensationalizing it. It's nice to have you with us. It's nice to have you listening to us. We're not going to sensationalize or start slandering people for the sake of it. Right, okay, so let's talk about Fulham, Old Trafford this weekend. Dave, you're going to be there. Paul, you're going to be there as well. They won away on the opening day at Everton, but they've not won away since. There are goals in their team. They've scored 5 goals a couple of times in the league, but they don't look great away from home. Ten Hag yesterday said a very interesting point. He was asked about whether or not he was confident about the latest run or whether or not he felt it was fragile, and he said he felt it was fragile. And I can understand where he's coming from, because United started yesterday and they had that balance and you thought they look like a proper team, but then Shaw goes off. I don't think he's been as good as you think he's been, Dave, but where he's been impressive is that the team's had balance, and a natural balance, United have been able to play a lot better. But we are playing this very precarious game where we start well because we've got a just about a fit side, but then the numbers start dropping. The performance starts dropping. Casemiro picks up a yellow card. Maguire picks up a yellow card. They both have to come off, and the style of the game has to change, and all those things that come into the natural thing, like you were saying earlier about Højlund being tired. All of these things start to impact, because United have got a pretty, as Ten Hag says, fragile framework to work. So you've got to kind of hope that United get enough goals ahead that when the injuries start to happen during the game, or when Casemiro picks up his yellow card, because it's going to happen every time, that you're in a strong enough position that the inevitable comeback doesn't hurt United so much. That seems to be the way that they're playing at the moment. Paul, you obviously from one of your old clubs, a club that you look out for quite a lot, so you're going to be more well-versed in them than what Dave and I are. What are you expecting from them this weekend, and what do you expect from United in return?
Well, I was there when they played. I was just recently watching week before last. I was trying to think who it was. Yeah, Fulham v Bournemouth. I was at that game, and Mooney's up front had maybe the best centre-forward performance for Fulham since they lost Mitrovic. He scored 2 goals in a game and he never stopped working. I look at them and they're always going to try and play football without a shadow of a doubt. Defensively, they do rely on maybe their oldest defender in Tim Ream. You know, I think he's incredible. I really, really like Tim Ream. Hardly makes a mistake. Very, very rarely. But I think coming back now, they've got Calvin Bassey will be back now. I don't know if he played the weekend, but Calvin Bassey must be back for that game. Fullback areas. Depends if he plays Tete or the Leicester boy. I've forgotten his name. The Belgian boy. I've forgotten his name. But they're not that great. They will, as I said before, want possession, want to play lovely football. If Tom Cairney plays, 9 times out of 10, I would say, and you mostly see at the weekend, that the reason why they struggled, they didn't get what they were expecting because they got beaten by energy. Tom yeah. Cairney can't move. He's good with the ball at his feet. He's very much like a 40, 50 years ago, he would have been a Tottenham player. He would have been a Glenn Hoddle. The way he moves, everything about it. But when it comes to anything dynamic around him, he can't deal with it. Cannot deal with it at all. So normally I would say you've got to get in around and move the ball quickly around him. But I'm talking about Manchester United. They don't do that. So Fulham will come there and they'll enjoy good possession again. Because United don't work hard enough without the ball. Fulham are very good with the ball. Muniz will run around, will cause problems to the centre-half because he's honesty. Out wide, Deco Dover, Reed, flats to deceive. He scored when I was there, but didn't see him again in the game. But they might play Harry Wilson, who'll be more of a threat. On the other side, they've got Robinson, and Fulham's best player is William, whatever they call him. He is their biggest threat offensively, without a shadow of a doubt. So it needs Dalot to have his defensive head on. And Willian works back and he works forwards. But when he gets in and around that box, 9 times out of 10, he gets a delivery in and they will deliver. They won't fanny about and threaten. They'll deliver. So it's about on the day, really. I mean, of course they're beatable. You look at it now and you've got to say that United have to beat Fulham given what they've done to keep this run going. It'd be a massive disappointment if they don't get 3 points at home. Even more so since I'm actually going to be there watching it live. So on that side of it. But the game, the easiest thing to say, is winnable and should be won. But United, just every team comes to Old Trafford now. And they don't feel a fear factor when they come out onto the pitch anymore. So that's the difference.
Yeah. It's fair. Willian's an interesting one. I remember Renny Mullenstein telling me when we were doing the book that when he was at Anzhi, I can't pronounce the second name of the club, but William there, and he was going to Chelsea, and he was recommending him to United. And at that time, I thought he was a very good player for Chelsea. He was a good player for United, the work rate. And he's still, like you said, when we played them at Craven Cottage, I think he was probably their biggest danger man. He works hard all the time. And you know that, all right, he may not have the energy that he had 8 or 9 years ago, but what he does have is the quality when you give him the space on the ball. And I do have to be wary of that, especially, like I said, Dalot, the player will be marking him. You would imagine he'll get more time on the ball than what you'd like to. So it's going to be an interesting battle. But Dave, United at Old Trafford, I guess we can't take it for granted. The Bournemouth game was taught us we can't take any game at Old Trafford for granted. But United are in good form. Hoyland's in good form. There is some balance between in the side at the moment. Hopefully Shaw was taken off just as a precaution. So all those things like the balance should still be there. And it does, I think a lot of it does come down to whether or not United do have that balance in the side, whether or not they feel like it looks like a side that starts in the right way, not necessarily scoring the first minute, but in the way that they set up as a balanced side. Because if they lopsided, and like Luton yesterday, like Villa the previous week, yes, United got away with it and probably deserved the wins in both games. But they were put through the ringer, and Fulham do have the players to do that. So what are you expecting from the weekend?
7-0 and yeah, that's I am a little bit more confident these days of playing at Old Trafford, which wasn't the case before Christmas. As Paul said earlier on, teams come to Old Trafford nowadays and there's no fear. And there hasn't been a fear like there used to be if we're gauging against that for many, many years. But if I'm talking about, you know, pre-Christmas and post-Christmas, I think I'm a lot more confident of winning at Old Trafford these days. I know we had a few late winners to win games, but I think that adds to the fact that we are starting to make Old Trafford back into, you know, a place where if teams come and get a point and they're happy with it. We're not at that level yet, but I do think that we are a hell of a lot more confident at Old Trafford these days than we were before Christmas. Fulham are a very, very decent side. They're a dangerous side. You know, they have a few good players up front, which will concern me on the day. But that said, I think, you know, I wasn't Dalot's biggest fan for the past couple of years, but I think over, especially in this run that we're on now, he's really stepped it up. He's actually been probably one of our best defenders, which we weren't saying that, you know, two months ago, 3 months ago, he was like a broken compass on the pitch. He definitely has stepped up. So it is going to be a tricky game, and Fulham are going to come to Old Trafford, you know, thinking that they can get something from it. But I'm confident with the run that we're on, you know, 4 in the league, 5 overall. And the fact that Hoyland, and I'm like you, Wayne, I'm a huge fan of him. I was not one bit concerned. I just thought the stat that, you know, all the way up to Christmas, he still hadn't scored a league goal was like a bit of a, it was mind blown considering he was at one point the top scorer in the Champions League. So that's why I had no fear that there's goals in the guy. He just needs one or two of them to hit his face, his arse, his whatever. And now we're starting to see the striker that we, you know, that he's probably maybe a little bit ahead of the curve now because he's scoring all types of goals now. He really is. I mean, that one that he got through the week where he just, you know, where it came across the box and I think it was Wolves. And he knocked it in and he was celebrating while the defender was still on top of him. It shows you how much this game means to him right now. And I got to imagine that the stress and the relief of scoring now in the past 5 or 6 games has just, he's on cloud 9 right now. And everyone knows, you know, that strikers, they just, confidence is just everything to them. And once they have that confidence, they're scoring goals like he did with his chest the weekend, which was phenomenal. That's the biggest bonus for us right now. Garnacho playing on the right and Hoyland up front. The players are starting to feed him more these days. It was quite mind-blowing all the way up, even as late as January, where the guy had to try and create stuff for himself, and that's why he was half-knackered. So maybe now that they're starting to feed him, he won't be running as much, he won't be dropping back as much. But I'm confident that we will win. I'm a lot more confident at Old Trafford these days than I was before Christmas. And I think, you know, being on this run, 5 games on the bounce, I don't see Fulham stopping that at all. The other key thing as well is, and we may not have, you know, been happy about it at the time, is, you know, going out to Europe now, we're playing one game a week. You know, that's having a huge effect on our performance as well, and our levels of performance. You don't want to go out of every competition just because you want to play better in the league. And that's only a good thing if you're top of the table. And everyone knows that the Premier League is far superior than winning the Champions League. In my opinion, I think a lot of people would agree. Premier League is a lot harder to win than the Champions League. You know, terrible teams have won the Champions League. The best team wins the Premier League, without a doubt. It's only if you're in that mix that it's a real added bonus. But I think for us in our current position, the way we are as a structure, as a team, down to the bare bones, even past that at times, playing one game a week has definitely helped Manchester United. It really has. That said, I want to win the FA Cup. So.
Yeah. Hoyland to score 7 in a 7-0 win the weekend. You heard that first.
I'll be happy.
One very, very quick one before we go, because he's posted a nice comment, so I can't not allow Paul to revel in it. Milk Talica describes Paul as a legend and asks for your thoughts on Kobbie Mainoo, and I'm always here for a bit of Kobbie Mainoo love, which I presume you're able to give him, so please feel free.
I personally think the lad's going to be great. And I don't say that very often, to be perfectly, because I'm such a skeptic normally. But he is, just by the manner. You look at him, I think I said it before, the lad should be a card player. Just nothing phases him. And the one thing I say, everyone talks about him playing for England. I really just don't want him to dive in too quick and just have a summer break rather than go and maybe just sit around. But he's far better than Calvin Phillips and Henderson, to be perfectly honest. There's more progression in his play ever than Henderson. You know, Henderson should have eyes in the back of his head, really, because the ones at the front are redundant. So, the lad is going to be something. It's absolutely incredible, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm always here for
you. And that tackle yesterday. I mean, that tackle is a book fight.
I didn't even want to get... It was embarrassing. It's embarrassing. That should be... They should take that away from him. He should not be holding that yellow card. That is the most perfect tackle from behind you can ever
Unbelievable.
Make.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Never made no contact with the player at all. It was absolutely embarrassing by that referee. What gave it in his head to ever think about giving a foul and then to yellow card him? It's the reactions of the other players. The opponent's reaction to it, they went chasing him to get the ball back. They didn't go there looking saying, you've injured one. The player he tackled, he's got straight up to his feet to get back. And just a quickie as well, Casemiro never touched that player for his booking. Referees are the blokes, I'm going to use this word again, the bloke who it was cheated again.
Yeah.
That's two in a row he's had now. Matty Cash did it the other day. They get close to him, they fall over. And then you see the other players on the second challenge you've made. It was just quick feet of the other player. I think it was Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley's got quick feet. He moves the ball quick. He doesn't get to it. He touches him because it's a contact sport. And then you've got the other lad, the captain, going mad at the referee, virtually saying, send him off. I thought that was a yellow card. Yeah. So managers now are telling their players, get close to him and throw yourself to the floor. You'll get him off the pitch. I've seen stuff on the, I don't know what to call it now, XZ, Twitter, whatever they call it, Zappa, whatever they want to name it, whatever day.
Zappa.
Yeah, of United fans turning around and saying, that's enough now, he's gone, he's getting booked every game. If you look at it, people are cheating. They're cheating now, and they're the bits that should be stopped. Give them a pink and yellow and red and green card or something, a rainbow card. They love a rainbow card. Give them a rainbow card for something. It's embarrassing. Yeah. I sit there and I hate it now, what's happening to the game. We're getting too many cheats in the game. That's my another rant, and I went totally offline now, but there you are.
Well, before we go, the funny thing is, though, for the first 3 or 4 or 5 months, whatever, 4 months, like Casemiro was out. Zapper, as you lovingly called it, Twitter was complaining. Oh, this is the reason why Manchester United are doing well. We don't have Casemiro. And you're right. I went on there this morning, and everyone and their granny is like, "Oh, we should get rid of that guy. He's a liability." I'm like, "Oh my God, what are these people talking about?" This guy's one of the best midfielders in the world, and we're only kicking on in the past 5 or 6 games because he's come back. Because he got a stupid yellow card that wasn't his fault, we have to sell him now? That's just utterly ridiculous.
Mm.
The reaction is shameful.
Well,
sorry, I'm done. I'm done as well.
I will say, and Tony says 100% Paul agreed. So the rant was worth it, and I completely agree. And if anyone is qualified to talk about great tackles, then I'm not going to give him too much praise because I'm just about to get bullied.
But I think you need to change that bit, really. Maybe change that to challenges.
Yeah. Well,
you're talking about Paul. I thought you were talking about me. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm talking like, obviously, I will end with a compliment that Paul was obviously the tackler of his generation. So if someone's going to praise Kobbie Mainoo for perfect tackles, then Dave may be qualified. I don't know how, but we can defer to Paul's judgment on that one. for sure.
I'm qualified because unlike Jordan Henderson, my eyes at the front work. Pardon the pause, so I'm okay.
Tony says, Paul's the only player I saw get the better of Mark Hughes. He was class. Yeah, and I bet the one thing that is probably certain is that Paul probably didn't feel like he got the better of Paul Hughes, Mark Hughes, because he gave everyone bruises. Hughes bruised. Hopefully we're talking about Hoyland's 7 goal this week. If you've enjoyed the podcast, if you can give it a rating and review on the platform you are consuming it on, we would very much appreciate it. Back next week. Stay safe, stay well. Thanks for listening and watching.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.